Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
What's going on, everybody? Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd for On the Double. A little bit of a late start, but let's go right out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and head to Seattle. Welcome Tom Hutler of Como Radio. Tom, thanks for your time tonight.
My pleasure.
Hey, Tom, still coming down from the emotional high yesterday from a spectacular game at the Clink.
Wow, it's the most common sentiment that I've heard today is people saying, I still can't believe that that happened. I can't believe that it really unfolded the way it did. It's just amazing the chain of events that had to unfold and everything that had to go perfectly right in order to achieve that end, and yet it all happened, and it was so unlikely.
You know, believable or unbelievable, and that's exactly the word that Sean Wally had texted me yesterday when we were watching the game. And, you know, at the end of the game, unbelievable came out, and that is the sentiment. But, you know, with the clocks hitting zeros, it is believable. The Seattle Seahawks did something amazing, and that was, you know, coming from behind in a football game that seemed like was out of reach for them.
Yeah, you know, it was everybody kept saying, well, they're a second-half team, they're a second-half team, but the deeper you get into the season, the better the team you're playing, and you can't afford to be a second-half team. You've got to, at some point, establish yourself early in the ball game, and they just hadn't been doing that. And I don't think much more could have gone wrong in that first half. Fumbles, or a fumble, the interceptions, the penalties, balls that were tipped or deflected that went into the hands of the Packers. Russell Wilson was not on. The defense was giving up some yardage. It just seemed like everything that could go wrong had gone wrong. And then even early in the third quarter, it didn't really look like things had turned around that much. And then all of a sudden, click, 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 it all started to happen.
And Tom, what does it say about the perseverance and the will of Pete Carroll and the Seahawks to not give up when it looked very, very bleak?
Yeah, you know, you could tell that you could see sideline shots of Russell Wilson. He was trying to rally the troops. Richard Sherman clearly was trying to get the defense fired up. The crowd, obviously, is a huge part of that. And had the same situation unfolded on the road. I don't believe there's any way that the Seahawks make that comeback. But the people who I think felt worse, not quite as bad as the Packers did, but the people who felt worse were the people who had left the stadium thinking that this was over, and then they couldn't get back in. So they were the ones literally left on the outside looking in.
Tom, you've been around Seattle sports for many, many years. Where does this rank all-time, top one, top two, top three maybe?
I got to put it at number one. I can't recall ever seeing anything that amazing in such a high-profile game. I mean, I've been the public address announcer for the Mariners for 28 years, and obviously the game against the Yankees in 1995 is probably, or at least was, number one, but this probably knocks that one right out of there because of the dramatic way that it happened and the fact that it had to be a must-win to get to the Super Bowl with everything that was on the line. Tough to top that one.
Tom Hutler with Como 1000 joining us here on the Double. And Tom, of course, you being a PA announcer, you know, put yourself in the PA announcer's shoes as far as calling this game. Is there any way that you feel that you could have maintained composure? Because it just seemed like everybody became unhinged. There were talks of media broadcasters that were, you know, that just got beside themselves, and, you know, kind of give us an idea on what that was like and how tough it is to maintain composure.
Well, it is difficult. You get caught up in a moment, and I think you find yourself having to, or at least feeling like you have to talk louder because of the volume of the crowd. But, you know, you also have to still just do the job and provide the information that's critical to each play, who made the tackle, where the ball is, who made the carry, who made the reception. So it's something where you still have to maintain that composure. But it is difficult to maintain, I think, that level of professionalism in the face of everything that's going on like that. Randy Rowland does it for the Seahawks and does a great job, and I'm sure that it was very difficult for him to not get a little more fired up, a little more amped up than he normally would have. But you know, with that crowd going crazy like that, I think everybody is kind of elevated because of the energy of that crowd.
Now, I want you to think here, Tom, on, you know, a game that you have called PA announcing with the Seattle Mariners, a game that has had that possibly had your hair standing up on the back of your neck, and kind of give us an idea on the play by play, or not the play by play, but the PA announcing that you did for there.
Well, I referenced the '95 game against the New York Yankees, the game they called the double, when Edgar Martinez said the double down the line, and I just recall being in the booth, and this was in the Kingdome. We had a very tiny little booth with three other guys that were in the booth, one guy who was a sound engineer, one guy who played a lot of the music, and another guy who was kind of the producer of the game. And we just were sitting in this little booth, and I just remember Ken Griffey Jr. motoring around third base when Edgar Martinez hit that ball down to left field. And the vantage point we had, and kind of trying to size up the throw that was going to come in and whether or not Junior was going to be able to beat that throw. And I just recall that I'd never seen Junior running that fast. He always ran so effortlessly that it never looked like he was really, you know, trying to go all out. And this one, it was just a different level of speed that we saw. And so once that happened and they had won the game, I just said, there's no point in trying to say anything right now. There's no point in trying to recap what just happened because the crowd was going so crazy. It was so loud. A lot of times you just have to let the moment the crowd seize the moment, and there's nothing you really need to say at that point. And then after things died down, you kind of recap what's happening, recap what was going to occur next as far as, you know, then moving on to play Cleveland at that point. But that's probably the highlight. Then the other was with 2001, when Carlos Guillen had a bunt against the Chicago White Sox to move on and play for the American League Championship against the Yankees in a series, ultimately, of course, that the Mariners lost. But those are probably the two highlights right there, those two games, because they were series clinchers, and they ended in such dramatic fashion, although one ended with a double and one ended with a little infield bunt. So, but both had the same dramatic impact.
Tom, what are your memories of your first games on the mic for the Mariners?
Nervousness, a lot of excitement because I was involved in Major League Baseball in a capacity that I'd never been involved in before. You know, when you think about it, at the time there were 28 teams. I thought, geez, there's only 27 other guys in the country doing this job. This is really cool. And I grew up around baseball, played baseball, coached baseball. I've always loved the sport. And all of a sudden was, you know, fairly intimately involved with it at that point. But it was also a pretty shaky team at the time when 1987, 88, when I started doing this. And so every victory and every little sniff of possible success was something to be cherished. But ultimately, I just thought, this is really a blast. I'm getting paid to sit here and watch a baseball game, and it's something I probably would have been paying to do had I not had that job. And it was just a lot of fun, and it's still a lot of fun, and still something that I enjoy doing and hope to be able to continue to do for several more years.
Tom, what advice would you have for people that maybe want to look at getting into radio and also public address announcing?
I just think that first of all, you have to have a passion for either or. You have to have a passion for radio in general, and if it's sports that you want to be involved in, then certainly sports in particular. And feel and be able to communicate. And you know, people say, "Well, I don't have a very good voice," or you know, I'm not sure I could do that. Well, I don't believe having a great voice has any bearing on it. It probably did 20 years ago. I just think if you have personality and a story to tell and a way to tell it, a passion for what you want to do, that, you know, you can do this as long as you're able to communicate rather proficiently as far as being able to get messages across. And I think that that's the key. So I would just say to anybody that's interested that it's something that in this day and age you can get noticed, or at least have an example of your body of work by doing something just on the internet, on YouTube, on podcasts, and other ways to get that, at least get your name out there and have people take notice. Whereas in the old days, you had to send a demo tape to somebody that may or may not be listened to. With the access to the internet now, I think it's a lot easier for people to at least do some work and give an example of what you can do, and then you can get the word out, whether it be through social media or through phone calls or through emails. And I think that people have an opportunity to make themselves known. And you guys are an example of being able to get to an audience that it wasn't accessible here, you know, 15, 10 years ago.
Tom Hutler of Como Radio in Seattle and the public address announcer for the Seattle Mariners. Thank you so much for being flexible in your time tonight and your insight. And we look forward to having you on and having a great successful Mariners season here in 2015.
Well, I think we're going to have one. Thank you guys so much, and best of luck to you. And we will hope to talk to you during the baseball season.
Sounds great, Tom. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Sean.
There goes Tom Hutler, man of many hats in the broadcasting world in Seattle.
Yeah, you know, Tom took the time out to be with us on the double. And, of course, you know, getting ready for morning sports is something that you really have to prepare for and have enough rest. And so we thank Tom for actually being with us in this late start on the double. When we come back, we'll get to what we were talking about earlier, and that is the AFC Conference Champions and NFC Conference Championships. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
Yo, VIP, let's kick it.
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds. And since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away. And I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So, guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to Andro400.com. Andro400.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name. Yeah. 'Cause you're fine.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd.
Well, yeah, so, man, the commotion that we hear in the background, that is none other than Sean Wally, a.k.a. the head coach of the Washington Generals. And, man, I know that you just had a game that ended and a show that just ended. What was the outcome?
Everybody.
Well, we are in White Plains, Missouri, and a civic center of about 3,000 people. And unfortunately, in overtime, the Globetrotters pulled out a victory tonight.
Oh, man. Say it ain't so. I'm thinking that you are going to be the one, Sean Wally, the one that gets that second victory for the Washington Generals. It's been how many years? It has to be somewhere around 1973 or something like that. I could be wrong. When was the last time the Generals beat the Globetrotters?
Well, one of us was alive when it happened, and it was 1971.
I knew I was close, about 2 years off. But I think it's going to have to be up to you, man. I believe in you, and I believe in the team. I've got a chance to watch a few highlights, and you got some good guys with you.
Yeah, you know, I always say it's a great plan. It's, you know, I'm not out there executing it, so I'm always giving them the right plan.
There you go. There you go. Well, I'm sure it was a great game nonetheless, and you did awesome. Let's shift gears here. There are some exciting football games over the weekend. And, of course, I know that you're chomping at the bit to talk about this game. I mean, weather was going to be an issue, and, you know, there was driving rains and everything. And then it happened. What everybody knew was going to happen, the New England Patriots beat the Indianapolis Colts 45-7. What do you think about that, Sean Wally?
I don't know how the Colts beat Denver going back a week. They didn't deserve to be where they were because, I mean, look, they couldn't even compete. You know, at the very least, it should be a somewhat competitive game. And they could not do that. So, you know, somehow they shocked Denver, and that was not going to happen in New England.
There's some great commotion going on back there. Hopefully everything's okay. None of the Globetrotters or Generals have been taken to the hoosegow. But, yeah, you're exactly right, Sean. It was a game that was supposed to be competitive. It was a game that seemed like it, you know, was ripe for the taking for Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts. They didn't show up. They were minus their running back, one of their running backs. And, you know, it was just bad from the set. But what it did show is it showed that Tom Brady is Tom Brady, and he can lead a team to victory when we thought that, you know, maybe the New England Patriots weren't that team that was going to go back to the Super Bowl. And the Patriots proved everybody wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And now it's going to be what could be an epic Super Bowl on February 1st when you've got the great Tom Brady against the new young great quarterback in Russell Wilson, even though he had some issues yesterday, to say the least. And you've got the storyline of Pete Carroll against his old team. He was the last coach to coach the Patriots before Belichick, you know, and it's amazing that Belichick's been there so long, and now we'll see who can come out on top on February 1st.
Well, let's shift gears since you couldn't wait, but let's shift gears to the NFC Championship game. Of course, the Seattle Seahawks holding serve at home against the Green Bay Packers. This was a game that most were saying should have been a game that the Seattle Seahawks would handle respectively. Not saying that they would dominate the game, but with the elements of the 12s and being at the clink, it wasn't supposed to be a game that the Green Bay Packers were supposed to come out with a victory. Seattle Seahawks found a way to actually do that, Sean Wally, in a 28-22 win over the Green Bay Packers.
You know, pick an adjective: unbelievable, unthinkable, unprecedented. It's just amazing that Seattle could be so awful for three plus quarters, and then somehow every domino that had to fall fell correctly in the final 4 minutes plus overtime. Just amazing.
Yeah, you know, I believe that last week one of the things that you were talking about was Russell Wilson and how perfectionist he is as far as being one of the top quarterbacks to ever play. And, of course, as you were saying, the first three and a half quarters did not show that. As a matter of fact, he didn't get a completion in the first quarter. Passer rating was somewhere around 2 for most of the game until middle of the third quarter. It wasn't Russell Wilson-like, but when the opportunity arose, Russell Wilson showed up and rose to the occasion.
And it says a lot about him, about the team, about them not caving, not throwing in the towel, not giving up. You know, they've got a lot to correct, obviously, and come back on the first and see what they can do against the Patriots. And, you know, it's just amazing that whereas a lot of fans maybe didn't think it could happen, and, you know, the Packers thought they had it in the bag, but, you know, until the clock says zero, I guess you always got a shot.
Yeah, and that's the biggest key is that the clock didn't say zero. You know, I've been listening a lot to the media pundits in Seattle and the fan base, and, of course, Twitter and Facebook has blown up since the end of the game. And I did hear words such as you said, perseverance, never giving up, you know, destiny. You know, I did hear and see the word luck that popped up a couple of times. But what about the other team? And so, you know, there is the rest of the country that actually sees it as, you know, maybe McCarthy gave this game up, you know, with the understanding that Seattle took advantage of opportunities late in the game. But there are some decisions that were made that, you know, cost the Green Bay Packers an interception late in the fourth quarter to where Green Bay Packers didn't advance the ball to where maybe they can get into field goal range and put more points on the board. That was squandered. There were issues there to where the Green Bay Packers squandered in the first quarter. And this is one that I text you at the end of the first quarter, that even though it was 16-0 at the half, it was 13-0 at the end of the first half, or at the end of the first quarter. And it very well could have and should have been 28-0. But these are head coaching calls. These are coaching decisions. And as you leave a team like Seattle in the game, then, you know, opportunities arise. As we say, Seattle is a second half team. But one of the things that we didn't know was Seattle a comeback team? And Seattle showed just that yesterday.
Guys.
Yeah, Sean, sorry, we were just getting off the bus and had people yelling and screaming, so I didn't want to get that on the show. But, you know, it's funny because a lot of people think that the Packers should have gone forward on those fourth downs down at the goal line. And at the same time, a lot of people also think that you don't want to take points off of the board. And that's what you might be doing if you don't go for the sure field goal. So it's kind of a tough call. If you don't get the fourth down and you don't get the 6 points, then you look really bad. And, you know, really, Green Bay never got up to the red zone the rest of the game. So, you know, it's people have said on certain shows that, oh, well, if Green Bay would have won the coin toss, they would have won the game. Not necessarily, because they really didn't move the ball much the rest of the game. And, you know, of course, hindsight's always 20/20. So, you know, you can second guess things. Every team did yesterday in both games. And, you know, in the end, there's two victors and two teams go home.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, with this game here, you know, it just seemed like there were some decisions that were made by McCarthy that didn't allow his team to actually seal the deal. And you know, with the way Seattle was going and the way the defense was playing for Green Bay, everything was working. And when you go into this prevent, and you could actually see it. You can see that Green Bay went into a prevent, allowing Seattle to move the ball up the field. But what that did is that allowed Seattle to actually get into a rhythm, which eventually got them into the end zone, which eventually got them the onside kick, which, you know, sealed the deal for them to go ahead. And then Green Bay had to come back and kick the field goal. But by that time, the momentum had totally shifted. We're going to open up the phone lines. Of course, if you want to call in too, on the double with the Double S Express, the number is 888-429-5471. Again, that number is 888-429-5471. We have a guest caller calling in right now, and I believe it is Foo. Foo, welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express.
What up, Sean and Sean? How is it?
Well, man, it's definitely great for everybody in the Pacific Northwest, man. And my goodness.
Hey, tell your pops happy birthday, too. Sorry, I had to throw that in there. The thing that everybody just got to remember, you know, the Packers, yeah, they helped a little bit in giving it away. But the Seahawks, I don't know where you guys have already talked about, but, you know, all them turnovers, two times, first and goal inside the two-yard line. You know, the defense held them to field goals. We scored four touchdowns. They scored five field goals and a touchdown.
Right. So let me ask you this then. So because we were just talking about this, the two opportunities in the first quarter to where the Green Bay Packers decided to go for the sure thing field goals instead of the touchdowns. I want you to put your coaching hat on. If you're in a hostile environment in the clink, such as the clink, are you going for those field goals or are you going to try to press the issue?
I don't know about me. Everything that I know about coaching got totally wham-basted yesterday. Because I still don't. I mean, I was there. I saw it. I've watched all the news and stuff today, and they keep telling me the Seahawks won the game, but still trying to process it and stuff, you know. It's just kind of, I was telling Sean earlier that when we threw the fourth pick, I thought the game was over. I was like, there's just, you know, not enough time and too much to overcome. And plus, we hadn't shown anything really to that point. And then when we had it third and 16, we didn't make a play, so it made it fourth and 13 or something like that, and we punted the ball. Less than 5 minutes left to go. And again, who knew that the Packers would just, you know, play along and help us kill some clock and go three and out and the whole succession. I mean, there was six or seven plays that, you know, just those plays changed the whole outcome in them last couple minutes that everything kind of had to go Seattle's way. I mean, you know, and then for them to go cover zero basically on that last play when Jermaine Kearse, again, Lakewood, repping the 253 Lakes High School, Lancer's own, University of Washington as well. Sorry, just got to throw that in there. But anyways, you know, after such, you know, all four of those picks were intended for Kearse. Two of them were pretty much Kearse's fault as opposed to Russell's fault, they, you know, right off of his hands or chest or whatnot. And, you know, he comes through in the clutch, but it was because the Green Bay Packers thought they were going to run the ball with Marshawn Lynch, and they had him single covered with no safety help. And Russell saw that after a really, you know, horrendous day on his part as well. You know, the defense kept them in the game, you know, as they had the, you know, I looked up at the scoreboard, the hustle board at one point, and it said, I think 16 minutes to 4 minutes when they were about five to 6 minutes into the second quarter. And, you know, they had the ball twice inside the red zone before the Seahawks had their third snap of the game. And so it just a testament to the whole team. You know, the crowd was ridiculous. The crowd is definitely, you know, helped in the matter. And then when you look at it, you know, two consecutive years behind by double digits at halftime. This year, you know, establishing a new record for the most points to come back from at halftime in a championship game, a conference championship game. You know, just shows the belief that the players have in the coach and each other.
Now, what do you think it says about a guy like Jermaine Kearse, who, as you mentioned, from Lakes High School, the University of Washington, that he gets thrown to five times, four of them are interceptions, fifth one incomplete, and then he not only is able to catch the game-winning pass, but that Wilson still has the confidence in him to go to him?
Man, you know, Wilson has confidence in everybody on that team, especially Kearse and Baldwin. There's a, you know, there's multiple thought processes out there and stuff about why they got rid of Golden Tate, why they got rid of Harvin. The bottom line is they got rid of those players regardless of what all the side chatter was. They got rid of them because Jermaine Kearse and Doug Baldwin always show up in big games. And like Nate Burleson said on the NFL Network today, those guys are elite receivers. They are not pedestrian. And when it's big-time plays and third down in critical times, they show up and they make the catches. You don't have to catch 100 balls and 15 to 20 touchdowns to be an elite receiver.
Now, one of the things is now you had mentioned Doug Baldwin, and of course he doesn't hold his tongue. And, you know, Doug yesterday was in rare form just outside the locker room and explained to all the media and, you know, and broadcasters that, hey, you've doubted us and, you know, here we are. Of course, he had a couple of words back and forth with Hall of Fame DB Deion Sanders. And Deion had mentioned that the receiving corps for Seattle was all right. And he said just that. And so you're mentioning that, you know, big-time players come up with big-time plays, but what are your thoughts as far as the receiving corps and how they played as a whole?
You know, Green Bay came to play. You know, take nothing away from the Packers. They came into a very hostile environment where I think everybody and their mother, especially inside that stadium, which I believe set a new record around 68,000 plus for attendance, you know, there's a reason they're like, you know, only lost two games in Russell Wilson's last two seasons at home. I think the receivers do a great job. They are smart. You know, you got to remember, Pete Carroll has built this team with players that, you know, there's not a whole bunch of first-round players out there. You know, it's a testament to John, the general manager, and Pete Carroll for, you know, their scouting. I think that him being at USC for all that time and being, you know, recruiting, you know, they had files on the top 150 kids at every position in the country because they were USC. They could recruit anybody. So they know everybody. And so those kids that went in the fourth and fifth round and that they picked up in the undrafted or whatnot, and setting it up for competition. Remember when Pete Carroll came in, you know, he brought in the Mike Williamses, the Reggie Williamses, and he gave everybody an opportunity to make this team and to compete for a roster spot. You know, last year they bring in Matt Flynn, Tavares Jackson, who, you know, workhorse that had a great season for us a couple years ago. He's bought into it. He's bought into the whole concept. They've just been, you know, and they've been very fortunate. They not too many injuries at key positions. That's one thing that everybody's keeping an eye on with Sherman and Thomas going into the Super Bowl. And they've just been very fortunate, you know. Bobby Wagner, third-round pick, All-Pro. Russell Wilson, third-round pick, already a Super Bowl champion. You know, numbers that are ridiculous, and you know, as far as passer ratings, and just, you know, everybody talks about his maturity and leadership and all those types of things. Not to mention his legs, and you know, when it got down to it in crunch time, that's when you saw a little bit more of the zone read and the read options. And him kind of taking a little bit more with his legs. But I think their receiving core, it fits their team. They like people that can block. They like people that catch the ball when it's thrown to them. Willison, another, you know, from Rice. Underrated, very, very fine tight end. Nobody knew about him until, got hurt.
Now, Fui, obviously, man, it sounds like you have a tremendous knowledge, especially for the Seattle Seahawks. And, you know, for those of you, for those of our listeners who know you, you have a knowledge for sports all around. Now, give me your prediction on the Super Bowl and what you think the outcome is going to be.
Oh, I think the Seahawks are going to cement their place, especially defensively, as one of the best teams ever by taking out another surefire first-ballot Hall of Fame quarterback in Tom Brady.
And there you have it. It sounds like the Seattle Seahawks and the Legion of Boom will definitely take care of business. John, thanks for giving us a call. John, a.k.a. Foo. And, man, we'd love to have you on the show. And feel free to call in at any time. And of course,
God bless you both, man. Safe travels to you guys, and love you both.
All right, man.
Thanks, John. Have a good night.
All right. Oh, yeah, one more thing. Raider Nation, baby. Don't forget that. Peace.
There goes Foo of the 253 in the Pacific Northwest. And, you know, man, Sean Wally, that there was a lot of information given by Foo, a.k.a. John, and man, the Seattle Seahawks, you know, again, coming out victorious in this game. And they should be thanking the Lord above that they got the opportunity to see another Super Bowl here in 2 weeks.
Well, Sean, what's your take on what went down the final 4 minutes and then on into overtime? How does a team, like the Packers, lose that lead? How do they have everything go wrong that has to go wrong for them to give up that lead and lose that game?
Sean, what I'd mentioned earlier, it starts with the actual play calling. And I think McCarthy called I won't say a horrible game, because the game plan that was working in the first half and midway through the second half was working. I mean, the Green Bay Packers were shutting everything down. They had Russell Wilson flustered, hence the 4 interceptions. They had they had Marshawn Lynch, you know, actually having a decent game, but because he was only having a decent game, it caused Bevel to actually throw the ball more. And this was one of the things that a lot of people were saying, well, the Seahawks are a great second half team. That may be true, but they're also a great front-running team, which is what they do most of the year. And we saw firsthand that Green Bay had Seattle right where they wanted them, and the typical prevent defense, which what we all call prevents you from winning, the play calling by the coaches allowed the play calling of the Green Bay Packers allowed the Seattle Seahawks to have hope. And therefore, with that hope, they just stayed the course, and then opportunities opened up, and it allowed them to win the football game. To be honest with you, I don't think that it was anything that Seattle did as much as Green Bay not doing. I mean, it was working. Everything that they were doing was working, and then for whatever reason, Green Bay decided to let off the gas. They decided to let Seattle move the ball up the field. They decided when they did get another interception to just slide instead of trying to progress the ball. They allowed allowed themselves to take the ball away out of Aaron Rodgers' hands and put it into Lacy's hands to try to kill the clock, when everything that you had done thus far was to have your gunslinger and your leader of the team lead you down the field, and Green Bay went away from it. Now, I'm not taking anything away from the Seattle Seahawks, and don't get me wrong, because, again, you have to play the game till the clock hits zeros. But if you're asking somebody on the outside looking in who's not a Seahawks fan, it was more Green Bay losing the game than Seattle actually winning it.
Huh. Interesting. The other side of that coin is Seattle has to make all of those plays in order to win the game.
Yeah, exactly. And so let me ask you this. when was the last time you saw?
It's kind of both, isn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. It is a little bit of both. But let me ask you this. So the Seattle Seahawks get the touchdown to go ahead, I believe, by 1 point. So they're up 1 point. They have a 2-point conversion that they have to convert. Now, Russell Wilson scrambles around, does his best impersonation of Fran Tarkington and Jim Zorn, by the way, and he's scrambling all over the place on the opposite side of the field. There are two defenders over on that side as well that could easily have batted down the ball that was thrown to Luke Wilson. The ball, it wasn't like the ball was thrown on a rope. It was thrown as high as you could possibly throw it. And somehow Luke Wilson comes down with the ball, even with two defenders with position, mind you. So what are the odds of that? And so I understand what you're saying. I understand that the game has to play itself out. But there were so many things that happened that allowed Seattle to actually have that opportunity, one being that 2-point conversion. The other one prior to that was the actual bobble on the onside kick, which, the young man, I can't remember his name, but I believe that he was supposed to be a blocker, and for whatever reason, he decides to be the hero and go for the ball. And why you have him on your hands, team, and he can't follow a directive is beyond me. But that happened. And, you know, with all of those things compounding one after the other, yeah, Seattle, all they had to do was play their game. But here's the thing. If the onside kick was recovered, then we're not talking about Seattle. If the interception that was Russell Wilson's final interception that he threw was actually advanced at least 10 yards, which he could have ran 30, then we're not talking about Seattle. The thing is that Green Bay took themselves out of the game. And the more they took themselves out of the game, the shovel got bigger. The ditch became easier for them to bury themselves. And so, I just, it is what it is.
Well, apparently Foo can't get enough of the double S. Foo, what's going on, man?
Hey, look, man, boy, if Boyd's going to say stuff like that, then I got to call back, man. Come on now. Now, look, we done talked about this, all right? I'm going to have to side with Wally more than Boyd because, you got to play all 60 minutes, and in this case, they played a little bit longer. And, yes, you got to have some good fortune. And ultimately, the one play that, was the one play that probably was the biggest play was the onside kick, because that's just a standard football play. You've got to be able to recover a kickoff, whether it's onsides or not. And if you know it's coming, and, I feel bad for Brian Bostic, the tight end for Green
Bostic,
Bay. Got to feel for him because, but the thing is he came out and he admitted it. He manned up right away, and unfortunately for him, it's going to take a long time for him to forget that, he didn't do what he was supposed to do. And and you listen to Eric Davis this morning and quite a few of the guys, at the end of the day, it comes down to Green Bay not executing on the important plays. If you take those two short, third and short plays when they kicked field goals instead of scoring touchdowns, you take just all the little plays. Seattle made the big plays.
Yeah. Let me cut you off right there, John, because here's the thing. You're mentioning all the little plays, and those little plays turned into gargantuan plays. So Seattle had a third and a mile. And, it was third and 20 something, and they needed that, huge to keep the drive going. And what did Green Bay do? Instead of doing the thing that they normally do, which is put a little bit of pressure on Russell Wilson to make him flush or move out of the pocket a little bit, they gave him his first opportunity to actually stand tall in the pocket. They only rushed three, which that was the first time that I saw them do that during that game. And they picked late in the fourth quarter to do it. So Russell has all day to throw, and he finds Baldwin, which Baldwin was non-existent. for most of the game. As a matter of fact, Baldwin was non-existent because of an error, I believe, that he made early in the first quarter in bringing the ball out, and that humbled him. So the reason why Baldwin was actually talking after the game was he knew that he played like crap. And so now what you have is you have a player that, you said that we couldn't do this, that, and the other. No, you weren't doing it. Show me something that says that you were actually doing what you were supposed to do. If they would have won the game, if Seattle would have won the game by two touchdowns, yeah, Baldwin has all the right to say that. But because he was messing up beyond belief, he had no right to say that to the media. But, hey, who am I to say? You won the game. Now you're going on to the Super Bowl. But, yeah, you're
exactly.
Right, John.
The final score says they did what they needed to do regardless of the way it was done.
And that's the key question is you're boasting, meaning Baldwin, you're boasting, being boisterous in a situation that really the only reason why you guys won the game was because Green Bay was making dumb, idiotic decisions down the stretch. They just went away from their game plan. Everything was working for 3.5 quarters. Russell Wilson couldn't do anything. And we saw that Seattle was not a come-from-behind team if Green Bay would have stayed constant with the defensive plan that they had. But when they dropped into the prevent, it gave all the more confidence for a team like Seattle to come back, and I give them everything. I give Russell Wilson outstanding credit for threading the needle to Jermaine Kearse. That took a lot of guts. But if you stood pat with the defense and you don't go into that prevent, which, again, prevents you from winning, then I think that the outcome would have been different. That is on the coach, not on Bostic, not on, the players on the field. That's McCarthy and his coaching staff that decided to change the game plan because they felt like it was in the balance. And you're going against the world champions, so it's never in the balance. That's a bad coaching decision.
You know, Sean, I think you're right. I think it was poor coaching, but I think more so not just there. I think it was just the entire game. McCarthy is known as an aggressive coach. To have the ball on the 1 yard line twice, I was surprised. You could see Aaron Rodgers visibly upset when they sent Mason Crosby in for the second field goal from inside there. It says something to your team. You know, when you have a fourth down situation and you don't have the confidence in your team, or you're giving the defense that much respect, Seattle's already won the battle right there. And then right. When Seattle comes out with that fake field goal, that's not an easy play. That is not an easy play. John Ryan and Steven Hauschka deserve a lot of credit for going through the whole process of putting the ball down and going the process of the kick, because if you watch the film on that, the offensive left side where Gilliam came from, that defensive side of the right defensive inside of the ball came hard, and all three of them went inside for the block of the kick as Ryan peeled off and then was running the wrong way. And as Trent Dilfer said, looked a lot like him in his glory days in just throwing off with the wrong foot and a just absolute duck. That was only thing that was worse than that was Wilson's throw to, on the two-point conversion. That play again, the two-point conversion, a play that the ball was in the air and ha-ha Clinton Dix, who had a magnificent game to that point.
Right.
The rookie just doesn't make the play on the ball. I don't know what happened, but he has got to make a play on that ball. Again, that play right there, the Bostic play, the two plays, from the 1 yard line, kicking field goals instead of going for a touchdown. When the Seahawks scored their touchdowns, not going for two and kicking the extra point, staying true to themselves, not panicking. That was the biggest thing. I get that it took a lot from the Packers also. They helped. There's no doubt that the Packers helped. But, they helped from the very beginning. The Seahawks showed that they were that much better of a team. They didn't play as good that day, but they are that much better of a team because they did survive six turnovers. They did survive being down 16-0 at halftime.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, I think moving forward that Seattle learned from this. And this was a situation to where Seattle felt like, I believe the team felt like, hey, they could do no wrong. And because they have this, you know, this new leash on life, they're not going to let New England go in and do what the Green Bay Packers did. It was amazing. For me as a coach, you know, if I'm the coach and I'm going to play Monday morning quarterback, actually we're going to play Monday evening quarterback because that's what it is. But if I am the coach on the road, I would have to be the aggressor because my job is to quiet the crowd as quickly and put and swing the momentum into my favor as quickly as possible. And McCarthy didn't do that. McCarthy gave energy to the Seattle team and the 12s by kicking two field goals in the first quarter, which we all know that it would take nothing for Seattle to just march down and go up 7-6. So you accomplish nothing with three chances in the red zone. You throw a pick, you have two other opportunities in the red zone, and you come away with 6 points. That is fuel for the home team to say, hey, we got this. And McCarthy didn't do his job. I don't care if it was fourth and an inch, which it wasn't, but if it's fourth and an inch, I'm going for it because it makes sense to do that to your opponent, especially when you're on the road.
No doubt.
Now, John, a year ago, all three of us got to work the NFC Championship game in Seattle for Fox Sports. And yesterday, you were back there. Was it just like it was a year ago, crazy with about 7-8 TV trucks and 125 people?
The broadcast portion of it was ridiculously crazy. We got there, we had some of the technicians had a 5 o'clock crew call. I was there at 6 a.m. myself and got out at midnight. So nice, relaxing 18-hour day with absolutely no emotional energy drained at all. it was awesome. There were 7 TV trucks. Fox did an excellent job with their broadcast. It's always a pleasure to work with the people at Fox. Aaron Andrews and Chris Myers on the sidelines, of course, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman upstairs. I'm actually looking forward. I haven't had a chance to actually watch the game at home and hear the broadcast. And so I'm actually, looking forward to getting an opportunity to just relax and watch the game and listen to what the broadcasters were saying in the first and second quarter to see what their thoughts were, and what's going on. Because I know, like I was telling Sean Wally earlier, they're not my team either, the Seahawks. I'm a Raider fan, of course. God bless the silver and black. But, hey, I live up here. And ever since the Seahawks got booted from the toughest division in football, the AFC West, and got booted over to the NFC, I've found myself able to enjoy the Seahawks. I jumped on the bandwagon a little bit. But if they were to meet the Raiders in the Super Bowl, God willing, of course I'd root for the Raiders. But the Seahawks, they're on a tremendous run right now. They've been blessed with all these young players that have a lot of attitude because they feel overlooked. They feel this, that, and the other. They've taken care of all their young players on defense, Bobby Wagner, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, all these guys are signed to long-term deals. They've been real blessed with their, health and stuff like that, like I mentioned earlier. And they believe in each other. They believe in each other. I still don't believe that they won the game yesterday. It's the process of believing it is still kind of like, wow. I watched Frank Reich, lead Buffalo Bills back, from 30 points down or whatever against the Oilers back in the day. This was different because it was quicker. The Seahawks scored 44 seconds, I believe, they scored 15 points, and just what was on the line, being behind the whole time, not being effective in any kind of way or efficient. They've got a chance, they said, the first Super Bowl defending champion to win a playoff game in 10 years. Now they're the first one to return to the Super Bowl in how long? Obviously, one of the storylines will probably be, the Patriots were the last team to repeat. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and, that dynamic duo that have been to 9 AFC championship games. That in and of itself, And that's what the Seahawks are trying to get to. That's what they're trying to build. They want to be talked about in legacy-type terms. They don't want to be just a one-time Super Bowl champion.
Now, John, you being in the Pacific Northwest, you probably have a little bit easier access to what's going on in the current headlines. You mentioned health. Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, both having issues yesterday. Earl Thomas, a separated shoulder, an elbow issue with Sherman. They both had MRIs today. Have you heard anything come out of that yet?
You know, what I heard was Earl Thomas has a separated shoulder, and Sherman has some type of strained something or other in his elbow. But when I saw both of them on the NFL Network in one of their spots from the VMAC today, both of those guys said there's no question that they'll be playing in 2 weeks. And I don't know how much they'll be affected, kind of like Aaron Rodgers just yesterday. I don't know how much the injury will affect their play. But I tell you what, Aaron Rodgers last week and this week, I'm sure glad that we got to face him with a little bit of a nagging injury, because him not being able to move, I think, really assisted just everything,
Well, John, thanks a lot for calling back and letting us know what is going on up there in Seattle and keeping tabs on things while I am away.
Yeah,
no doubt, no doubt, man. You have fun out there. Don't get too fat eating all that good food on the road. And I'll be sure to be keeping eyes, ears on you guys, man. If boys starts cross-talking and saying all that crazy stuff, I have to straighten them out and stuff. But
hey, one more thing, John. Now, any word on you heading down to Arizona? Is that in the making, or is that it for the season?
I'm not going to Arizona. I gave everything that I could. I did everything that I could. I begged, groveled, and there were a couple of opportunities, but it just wasn't meant to be for this year. But I'll be blessed. I'm up here doing a lot of stuff with UW. Sounders season will be starting up shortly. Got high school WIAA championships coming up for play on sports. Wrestling, all the winter sports, wrestling, the basketballs, gymnastics, and things like that. So we're looking forward to it, and right now we're just able to just kind of relax. Football season was a long season for us up here in the Northwest, and, these last 2 weekends, there was a lot of energy spent, So God bless you both, and we'll talk to you guys soon, man.
All right. Thanks for being on, John.
Man, on the double with a side of John tonight, huh?
John has a lot of knowledge, man, and I knew that it was a matter of time before we would get one of our Pacific Northwest fans to actually call in and defend the Seahawks' honor, and I expected a few more, but it is what it is. I don't know what else to say. It was just one of those things when you piece everything together. In the end, the best team deserved to win, and they did win, But on the other hand, it was just the decision-making that was made allowed the best team to actually move on to the championship game. And, I'm sure McCarthy's going to be kicking himself. Aaron Rodgers is going to be kicking himself. One of the things I wanted to ask John was, what did he think about Aaron Rodgers not even going to Sherman's side? He went that way in the first quarter and negativity happened as far as an interception. But when somebody's injured and you're the type of player that Aaron Rodgers is, and you're considered one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, regardless of what the play calling is, you test that guy on the corner. And the Green Bay Packers didn't do that, and it opened themselves to for this to this to happen. And so, yeah, there are a lot of questions that are going to be – that have to be answered for Green Bay. And, you know, they get the offseason to do it. Everybody gets to start all over again. Seattle gets to live to see another day. And I think that Seattle will go in and take care of business against Tom Brady.
Well, Sean, we'll hold off on an official prediction until next week. I know how much you love those. But you've got a big week going on in Northern California, a little closer to the Bay Area. Fill everybody in. What is happening in the world of Chaminade basketball?
Well, man, Chaminade is in town for four games. Actually, they're out in the Bay, and they took care of Notre Dame de Amore a couple of nights ago. And they won by, my goodness, 40 points. And, of course, they're playing tonight, but the show must go on. And so we're here at the great studios in Northern California. But I will go out to the game on Wednesday, out to the Bay, to where I believe they play Dominican. And should be a fun time, man. But I thought that you were talking about the Oakland Raiders and their new head coach, Sean Wally.
No, sir. I was leaving that up to you to bring up. And, you know, it was probably quite a happy surprise and shock for the top brass in Oakland that their new head coach was even available.
Yeah. And, you know, we can thank Peyton Manning for that. Actually, we can thank the Indianapolis Colts for that, because that opened the door for Jack Del Rio, the former defensive coordinator for the Denver Broncos and former head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, to become the head coach. It just seemed like a match made in heaven. Del Rio is a Hayward, California native, and this is his dream job, is to actually coach the Oakland Raiders. The other thing is that now you're looking at Mark Davis and Reggie McKenzie that are forming a strong, star-studded coaching staff, which is one of the first. This has to be a first in a long time. There were talks of Mark Trestman, the former head coach of the Chicago Bears, just released this past season from the Chicago Bears, coming over as the offensive coordinator, along with Mike Smith as a defensive coordinator, to join Mike Tice, who has become the offensive lines coach for the Oakland Raiders. That would make for a strong, star-studded coaching staff. Just got word, Sean Wally, that Bill Musgrave is the new offensive coordinator for the Oakland Raiders. So that is something that is also exciting. If you don't get Mark Trestman, Bill Musgrave was high on everybody's list. He's worked with Jack Del Rio in Jacksonville. As a matter of fact, the good years in Jacksonville when the Jaguars were vying for a Super Bowl and went deep into the playoffs then. So that is great. But here's another name that has been coming up in the Bay that might be coming over to Oakland, and that is defensive coordinator Vic Fangio from San Francisco. Of course, Fangio being slighted by Jim Tomsula, who accepted the head job in San Francisco. So Vic Fangio's name is thrown out there, and my goodness, wouldn't that be a great coaching staff to get things started for the Oakland Raiders moving forward into the next season?
Well, it's good for the Raiders and Raider Nation to have some excitement and things to look forward to in 2015.
Yeah, you know, you have to start somewhere, and this is a great start. I think that Mark Davis is doing something that maybe Uncle Al didn't. And that is putting a lot of confidence into a strong coaching staff. I think this is a great idea, especially for a team that's ailing, that hasn't been to the playoffs in over 12 years. I think that this is great for the fan base, a fan base that is loyal through and through, no matter what, win, lose, or tie. And, you know, this is going to be a great situation moving forward, because I truly believe that the Oakland Raiders are great for the NFL when they're winning. And so once things get back to where they should be, with the Raiders vying for, you know, strong supremacy in the NFL, that makes for great revenue all around. That makes for a lot more people hating on the Raiders. That makes for the fan base standing up and protecting the name and the brand of the Raiders it is good for football. So, yeah, it's definitely exciting.
Kind of like people hating the Washington Generals and their coach.
Well, you know, the Harlem Globetrotters, the other show, is in town. They're in town yesterday and today. And, you know, I wanted to get a chance to get out there. But, of course, you know, our job never stops. So, you know, maybe I'll get a chance to get up there in the Pacific Northwest. When you bless everybody at the Key Arena.
That is my home venue, so that'll be a fun time. Got a lot of people that'll be there, and should be a great time all up and down from Everett to Seattle, Kent, Portland, Eugene, Yakima, Spokane, and Kennewick as well.
Well, yeah, we'll definitely keep those videos coming for those of our fans who are follow us on Facebook. Then make sure that you go to our Facebook page, like us on Facebook. You can go to us on Twitter at Double S Express, and you can also go online to double-s-express.com. Get a chance to see all the shows, see some of the videos that Sean puts up with the Harlem Globetrotters. And if you have any questions, or if you want to just say hi, you can send an email to Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at double-s-express.com, or to yours truly at Sean, S-E-A-N, double-s-express.com, just to say hello or thoughts or ideas.
Man, John, you must be calling to say goodnight. This is a record, a third time.
I am saying goodnight, but you guys started talking about Raiders, so I got to chime in real quick. You just got to understand. Hey, so Reggie's had some pretty good drafts the last couple of years. You know, it's been a long time since they did all that craziness with, you know, Jamarcus Russell and stuff like that, Darius Hayward Bay. Khalil Mack last year, solid. Derek Carr, the only rookie that started all 16 games in the regular season. You know, the future's looking good. Like you said, they hire Musgrave, you know, the old Oregon quarterback, as the offensive coordinator. He's had some success, you know. Khalil Mack last year was, you know, just awesome as a young player. So the future's looking good. MJD wants to stay, so hopefully he'll be healthy and be able to contribute in some kind of manner. They got to talk with Justin Tuck. I know Del Rio's going to be talking with him real soon. I think he's still got a good year or two left in him. So, you know, it's the Bay Area, and like I said, it's better to be a Raider fan any day over a Niner fan or anybody else in the Bay. Peace, you guys. Have a good night.
All right. Hey, that's a big amen right there. Oh, man, I feel like the lines are going to light up, man. There's a lot of 49er fans.
I'm just glad he left it with the Bay and didn't expand on that. And I was about to, you know, send some electric shock through the phone line or something.
No, hey, John had a great time yesterday at the game, and he put some videos up as well that, you know, he showed his Pacific Northwest pride, no doubt. So, Mr. Wally, show number 88 in the books, man. We had guest number one, Tom Hutler, on from Como 1000, does the morning show, morning sports for Como. And, of course, the actual voice, the PA announcer for the Seattle Mariners. And then we've had our surprise guest number two, John, from up in the Pacific Northwest. Old-time friend doing some great things with the networks as well. A lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. Does everything from football, baseball, basketball, you name it, golf, the whole nine. So John blessed us with coming on in the second half. So it's been a great one, Sean.
Yes, indeed. My final show from the land of Missouri. I believe next week I should be in Houston, I believe.
Okay. Well, that's a great venue down there in Houston, and so I'm sure you will have fun making your way down southward. So did you get a chance to have some of the barbecue over there in Kansas City?
I did. Went to a good barbecue restaurant that was recommended called Jack Stack, and it was very good.
So was it everything that everybody brags about and talks about? Because, you know, let's face it, they're saying that Kansas City is the mecca of barbecue. And so would you go out on a limb and confirm that?
I don't know that I had enough variety to say that. Yes, it was good, but I don't know that it was out of this world good.
There you go. Good save, because there are some great places up in the Pacific Northwest that do excellent at barbecue also. And so we wish you safe travels, my friend. And, of course, show number 88 is in the books.
Hey, you're on it. Are you checking your mail? Did you ever get your New York City postcard yet?
I did get my New York City postcard. I apologize. What a great postcard. And thank you very much, man, for sending that. I forgot to tell you.
Jeez. Things I can do for you.
And before we go off the air, Mr. Wally, we must say and give respects to a great day today for those of us who had the holidays, the day off today, Martin Luther King celebration, Martin Luther King Day. Of course, his birthday is actually January the 15th, but we celebrate it every third Monday of January. And we just want to, you know, thank Dr. Martin Luther King for his vision and his dream and, you know, just standing in the gap and, you know, helping society as a civil rights guru. And, you know, again, this was a great man who had a strong vision that we will have a lot of coalition and we will all, you know, rise up as a nation to be better people. And so, you know, again, congratulations to Dr. Martin Luther King for his vision, and happy MLK Day.
Well said, Mr. Boyd. And, you know, people aren't perfect and things aren't always as great as they should be, but they're definitely a lot better than some things in the past. So
no doubt.
It's definitely something that needed to be done back then. And it's a shame his life was cut short, but he is never forgotten.
Never forgotten. That's right. Well, show number 88 is in the books, my friend. Make sure that you get some rest, because you have to use your voice in trying to beat the world famous Harlem Globetrotters. Good luck on that one, Mr. Wally. Show number 88 in the books for Sean Wally. I'm Sean Boyd. Don Newsom, our engineer. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Yeah, you can be the greatest, you can be the best, you can be the King Kong banging on your chest.
You can beat the world, you can beat the war, you can talk the guy, go banging on his door.
You can throw your hands up, you can beat the...